those groups.
But that does not exclude or eliminate white men. Because white men could, we are not saying that white men are historically advantaged. We may have someone from the trade union movement who could be a white male. Likewise, we have interviewed a number of very good candidates. Please do not feel that you are negatively and in a negative way that you are disadvantaged. There has been no live streaming. So there isn't a single candidate who has witnessed these interviews on parliamentary TV. I've requested that parliamentary TV not do a live stream of the interviews, because certain candidates would then be at an advantage. They would see the questions and the interview process on TV, whereas others would be at a disadvantage if you came as you are our second last candidate. So you're not the last candidate, there's still another candidate to be invited. Thank you very much for waiting patiently for us as the committee and the panel, and I hope that your travel arrangements were made very efficiently and that we were very professional in arranging your accommodation and your flights. Mr. Zita, from my side, as the chairperson, could you introduce yourself to the panel, giving us some points of why you think you have the experience, the qualifications, which aspects in your current living environment and conditions would be advisable for us to look at and would be favorable in your situation for you to get a position on the Critical Infrastructure Council. We get the time now? 13:49. Thank you. 13:50. You get an hour for your interview. But that includes also asking you questions and follow-ups. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the panel, for the opportunity. My name, as already indicated, is Richard Zita. I am 48 years old. I was born and bred in Gauteng. I'm currently based in Limpopo. That's where I am working. I hold qualifications in engineering, business, and law. I've got over 25 years of working experience, you know, public and private combined, in different organizations, the automotive industry being the dominant one, defense. There was a time when I worked for Kentron, a division of Tinel. I had the opportunity to work on the Royfal project, particularly the combat helmet. Also in the transport and logistics sector, Transnet, and then currently in the economic development space. I have been a member of the executive committee in this organization since 2008. Meaning that I have had a lot of interactions with the board, especially in the process of strategy development, and as well as, you know, accountability.
My apologies, Mr. Zita. Yeah. I'm sure you can hear an echo.
Yes, there
and
is.
And it's irritating you.
That's what
I can just see you. You're a little bit irritated. Can I ask that we just, in terms of justice to you, so that it doesn't distract you, because I can actually see it's irritating you. Could I just ask the sound technician?
I will appreciate it.
Yes, I can see it on your face.
Okay.
All right, thanks. I also become irritated if there's disturbances in my head. Don't like it. Thank you very much. My apologies, Mr. Zita. That sounds better already. Colleagues, if you could all, if there's an echo at your desk, could we just put our gadgets on a different position, because it does, you can see that it does distract the candidate. Mr. Zita, now your time starts now. We give you back your time. Time? 1354. Your hour starts now.
So I start from scratch, right?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Richard Zita. I am 48 years old. I was born and bred in Pretoria, but currently residing in Polokwane. That's where I'm working. I hold qualifications in engineering, business, as well as law. Furthermore, I have over 25 years of working experience, both public and private combined, in the following areas. The first one is automotive, quite a substantial amount of years in there, followed by Dinel. I used to work for Kentron, which was a division of Dinel, and I was the quality assurance or the liaison person between then South African Defence Force and Kentron in respect of quality assurance of the hardware that we're building for them. I had the opportunity to participate in the development of the Royfalk combat helmet. And then I also worked for Transnet, which is transport and logistics. And then lastly, I am with the Musinamakado Special Economic Zone, which is based in Limpopo. I started the project as the project executive. We then evolved, upon receiving cabinet approval, into a state-owned company called Musinamakado SOC. And then we recruited a chief executive officer, executives, and the rest of the team members that were required to be able to execute the strategy of the organization. As I've indicated, I have been a member of the executive committee since 2008 to date, and I have been able to amass quite a substantial number of skills The first one being infrastructure development, both public and private. The second one being risk management, as well as project management. Those are some of the skills that I have. I also have the ability to be able to communicate at all levels. I'm quite keen to research in order to enhance my skills and to be able to do the work better.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pico.
Thank you, Chair. My question will be, what is your understanding of critical infrastructure and why should critical infrastructure in our country be protected?
Yeah, thanks very much for the question. So the way critical infrastructure is defined is as follows. It is the systems and the assets that if they are tampered with, they could result in significant disturbances, which has got the ripple effect in the security of the country, public health and safety, and as well as the economy. Okay. Why is it important that South Africa must safeguard its critical infrastructure? Let's take a step back. Recent developments suggest that there are certain things that we don't have control over. As a start, let's use climate change. Okay? So we understand that there is a problem because of greenhouse gases. We find ourselves in a situation where the climate patterns have changed dramatically, and sometimes we end up with things like your thunderstorms and stuff like that, hurricanes and so forth and so forth, if you are in the U.S. Now, the other issue that is very important is the country-to-country attacks, inclusive of cyber attacks. So the other one in South Africa, we've got single entities, for instance, electricity generation, you only have got Eskom. Now, if Eskom was to be tampered with to the extent that the load shedding that we have multiplies by 10, we are all going to be in trouble in terms of the economy, telecommunications, and stuff like that. Now, based on all of these developments, especially the cyber attacks that are escalating, NATO members, for instance, they've taken a view that cyber attacks should be seen as a declaration of war against a particular country, and it must receive the same response that the conventional war that we know about, where military troops are deployed, helicopters and missiles. So it must be an equal response to cyber attacks, right? And we also know that there has been incidences in South Africa. For instance, the Okay. Yeah. Alright, so do I continue or start? Oh. Okay, say. Yeah, it's worth it.
Testing 1, 2, testing 1, 2.
Can't find them. They're not even here in the building.
Mr. Zita, that you are in Parliament, and we've moved here to have a better venue, and it's unfair on the candidates to be disrupted. We will make a note of it. In fact, it's being recorded. We'll make a note of it. Yeah, we'll make a note of the fact that we disrupted you twice. For on behalf of the entire panel, my apologies for this.
Okay.
Maybe it's a phone somewhere.
Testing 1, 2, testing 1, 2.
Hello, hello.
Testing. Testing, testing.
Hello? Hello? This one is all right. Not all right. Sorry, it's worse. Hello?
This one is working.
Testing,
testing?
No, it's fine.
Huh?
Chi?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. We can hear you.
From sound and vision. So we just have to wait for that person to come up. Sorry about the inconvenience there, Chair and honorable members.
Let's ask questions with our own parliament. We are about to start. Could we take the time? It's now another attempt. It's 14:21. But please relax. We have disturbed you. So relax. Whatever you would like to ask and question, you have the right to be irritated and annoyed. And I sincerely apologize for this. Honorable Peacock, would you like to still ask the same question or would you like to ask a follow-up?
No.
You are happy.
You are still,
I said I'm still asking you. We are still on the same question. Mm-hmm. All right. Again, you don't need to repeat. You did quite well with that and you can continue.
Okay. Just a little bit of a recap. Why South Africa should safeguard its critical infrastructure. So as I was saying, we have natural disasters that we have no control over, typical the current, you know, pandemic. And there's also disasters that are brought by climate, you know, changes. And then we also have the so-called single entities, like, for instance, Eskom, electricity provision, and Telkom. So if you look at Eskom, for instance, should something dramatic happen with Eskom, we won't have electricity for a very long time, and it will have a ripple effect in all the other sectors of the economy, including public health and safety, because it means all your ICUs now won't have electricity provided to them. Yes, they do have a backup power, but it has got a time prescription. And then also, most of our infrastructure, because of the industrial revolution phase we are in, they are running on Internet of Things. So now with Internet of Things comes the cyber attacks. So you've got the natural threats and then as well as man-made threats. So cyber attacks are basically man-made. And we've had a case in South Africa, I think it was the Johannesburg electricity building billing system that was actually tampered with. If I were to use the U.S. as an example, in Florida, they tampered with the water treatment plant to the extent where they wanted to change the chemical composition thereof. Over and above that, we have what we call a foreign interest operations. So you get a situation where another country wants to get involved in the dynamics of another country. As an example, insofar as the elections are concerned, the U.S. is still crying foul, 2016 elections as well as 2020 elections. 2016, they were talking about other countries that interfered with the system. And then in 2020, maybe less of the countries, but there was talk around a dominion system that people believed that it was tampered with. So those are some of the things that are threats that we need to address. Now, as I said, the NATO members decided that the cyber attacks must be treated exactly the same way as you would treat a country to or state to state, you know, attack using conventional methods such as soldiers, aircrafts, missiles, etc., etc. And then further to that, there is the UN Securities Council resolution of 2017. I think it's resolution number 2341 that really says that the countries must do everything to safeguard the security of their critical, you know, infrastructure. Because of course, a critical infrastructure would have a ripple effect on the key issues of the country that I've mentioned, being security, public health and safety, economy and so forth. Okay, I pause.
Thank you very much. Honorable Shem Beni.
Follow-up, Chair.
Please put your mic off. Before we do Shem Beni, Honorable Peacock would like a follow-up.
Okay. Why do you think it is an overall intention of the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act?
At the very high level, there are two things. Of course, we are a member of the global economy. If there is a UN Security Council resolution, it delves into international law, and that we, of course, have to abide with. A Critical Infrastructure Protection Act has got two significant aspects. The one is the security of critical infrastructure itself. And the second one is the safeguarding of the information that pertains to critical infrastructure. And of course, it talks about having a framework by which we can be able to identify and declare what is critical infrastructure. And we know that critical infrastructure can either be in the public or the private, you know, space. So, and then of course, it talks about the capacitating of the stakeholders that are involved in critical infrastructure safeguarding, and as well as the sharing of information.
Thank you very much. Honorable Shem Beni.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Zita, do you think that the public should be allowed into the critical infrastructure and be free to take photographs? If you say yes, you can give me an example of the type of the critical infrastructure where public is allowed and where public can take photos. And if you say no, you give me an example of that critical infrastructure where the public is not allowed and they cannot take photos. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much for the question. Look, an ordinary member of the public would not necessarily have the capacity to tamper with critical infrastructure at face value. So let's assume this was a critical infrastructure where I am right now, and then I can be able to see certain things. But for me to be able to conclude within a very short space of time, the security systems that you have in place to safeguard the critical infrastructure is not easy. So I'm saying members of the public, they are allowed to indeed get involved, in my view, in matters of critical infrastructure. As I said before, there are quite a significant amount of critical infrastructure that will be lying That is currently lying in private hands and will be so in the future. Let me give you a typical example. We have now opened up as a country for the renewables to generate energy and supply it to the grid. So as I've already explained, energy is one of the critical infrastructure systems that we've got in the country. So if you have the private guys now generating energy and sending it to the grid, that automatically becomes a critical, you know, infrastructure, and it's sitting in private hands. The key here is the type of risk assessment that we carry out, and then followed by the mitigation factors. Yeah, I would like to pause there.
Thank you very much. Honorable Shembeni, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you. So, in other words, you want to tell me that, or the committee, that there are infrastructures of low risk, the infrastructures of high risk. That is what I wanted to actually to know, that if there are infrastructures of high risk and infrastructures all of low risk, how do you determine that? Thank you.
Yeah, so there's two key issues that emanate from your question there. So one is the infrastructure exposure to risk, right? The second one is the impact that such infrastructure will have in the country should it be tampered with. So let's deal with the impact. The impact goes back to areas where you have single entities. So if you have single entities and the infrastructure thereof is tampered with, you will have a problem, right? Now, in terms of exposure, right, the physical side of exposure is very limited to South Africa. Let me give you an example. State-to-state attacks are... I don't think, of course, laymen, I don't think that there is a country that wants to attack, you know, South Africa physically. But there are a lot of people that probably wants to tamper with our virtual systems, the Internet of Things, so that they can be able to disrupt our operations and access confidential information that could be sitting in banks, for instance. You wanted an example of what constitutes a critical infrastructure. A bank is sitting with a lot of information that is confidential. So should another country have access to that, it will have a devastating impact on the country. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shembeni. Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Thank you, sir. What do you think is the role of the South African police services and other security agencies in the protection of the critical infrastructure in the country?
The if you go back to the definition of the critical infrastructure, in particular the effect or the impact it would have in the country, there is a security that is mentioned there. And now we know that the matters of public security lies in the hands of the South African police services and its subsidiaries or sub-departments. So their role is very, very critical, especially in light of the fact that we have a constitution that bestows rights into individuals. So you could very well be having an individual that tampers with your critical infrastructure, but you are not in a position to take law into your hands. Now the South African police services will have to deal with matters of that nature. So it is for public order and public, you know, policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh Imam. Are you happy? Honorable Majosi.
Thank you, Chair. In your own opinion, Mr. Zitta, what are the key challenges facing the council, and what role should the council play in strengthening critical infrastructure?
Thanks very much for the question. The Critical Infrastructure Protection Act was only assented in 2019. I think it was November 2019. So meaning that it is fairly new. There has never been, in my understanding, there has never been a council of this nature before. So in other words, the council is actually starting from scratch. There has been critical infrastructure, there has been safeguarding of such, but not informed with an act of this nature. I know that we had legislation around national key points, which has since been repealed because we now have a critical infrastructure protection act. So the council, as it comes in, the first thing that they must do, because they must set up the systems that we currently don't have, so we must be in a position to have a system to be able to identify and declare a critical infrastructure. And that system must be objective because members of the public, as I said, they are allowed to come forward and apply for their respective infrastructures to be declared critical. So we have that. We have to have that system, which will provide a framework for the identification and declaration. And then once we have that, there has to be a policy on how do we conduct risk assessments of such a critical, you know, infrastructure to the extent that. Should a person submit an application to say, I want my critical infrastructure, I want my infrastructure to be declared critical, there is an assessment methodology in place that will assist the responsible parties, more so the South African Police Services, to be able to go out there and then have a look at that asset in line with the guidelines and then make recommendations thereof. And then the council also must look at ways on how the private sector can be brought or on board. I say this because security in most instances it's seen as an unnecessary cost up until you have to bear the consequences of not having secured a particular infrastructure. So there has to be a deep mobilization of the public sector in that regard. And we must also, to a certain extent, have regulations. If we believe that some infrastructure is more critical than others. And then there has to be a capacity building. So the council must identify now areas that are very important for it to be able to execute its function, and how members can be able to be capacitated to fulfill that role. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable de Blanche.
Mr. Zita, thank you. Name the key strengths from a technical and leadership perspective which you will bring to the CIC if you are appointed, and what do you think are your areas of growth? Thank you.
Thanks very much for the question. The first thing is that a person in this role must have at least an idea of what constitutes infrastructure, let alone critical infrastructure. Okay? The second issue is that I have been involved with infrastructure for most of my career. So it ties well with that. The second issue is that in this role, you must be able to safeguard the information that pertains to critical infrastructure. As I've already mentioned, I've worked for GNEL before. It's a high security environment. We also had to undergo a similar vetting system that the chair was alluding to earlier on. And further to that, so meaning that I understand that the information needs to be classified, and that information cannot just be disseminated to everyone, right? So there are certain people that will have access to certain pieces of information and others will not. I have worked in environments where information needs to be protected. DNL is one of them. In the automotive industry, you've got to protect your ideas as in patents, because if the competition finds out about what you are trying to do before you could even launch a new car, you can invest a lot of money in research and development and launch a car that is not going to sell because the competitor has already read into your strategy, and they are then able to diffuse your moves. So in terms of the weaknesses, of course, or areas of improvement, I have not worked very closely with the police. So I think it is an opportunity for me to be able to understand that space better. The risk management side of things, I'm fairly comfortable with that. And I believe that I do have the technical wherewithal to be able to categorize what is critical and what is not, especially given the fact that I have been involved in economic development projects, you know, as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Ma.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that, sir. I see you've got a lot of experience and things and qualifications, no doubt about that. My concern is that you are the executive manager or director at the moment on the Musina Makado Special Economic Zone. So I'm not sure what is going to happen if you do get appointed onto this council, because remember, initially the council is going to have a lot of work to be done. And how is that going to impact? But I think I'm going to just add my other question to it, if it's okay with you, Chairperson. I also noticed that the Musina and Makado special economic zones appear to be in the media and things for the wrong reasons. There's a lot of allegations that are being made about this particular entity, and maybe you can just tell us what the position is there. But very importantly, my question is, I think you do appreciate the challenges we're facing in the country in terms of corruption, looting and maladministration and fraud, tender fraud particularly. And I think there's some questions here about China and things. But however, have you ever been had any allegations made against you for mismanagement, fraud, corruption, or tender fraud or anything of that? Or have you at any of the institutions that you might be employed at had to appear before a disciplinary committee for gross insubordination or fraud or not attending to your work timely or anything of that negative that might impact on the success of this council, which depends on those people that we appoint? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let me start with the balance now between my current employer and the new role. Quite certainly there is a relationship between the two. At Musina Makado SEZ, what we seek to do is to develop infrastructure that will eventually stimulate economic growth. So we hope to attract multinationals to come and invest in the zone. So there's a relationship. I can only hope that my superior will appreciate the fact that I will be growing into this area of risk assessment and mitigation insofar as critical infrastructure is concerned. The other matter that I looked at, the Act stipulates that the council must meet at least four times or at least once per quarter, right? I do appreciate that the quantum of work, because the council will be starting from work from scratch, will be more in the beginning where there are frequent meetings. But I believe that it's something that I can be able to work it out with my superior by putting more hours, because I also stand to benefit as an individual from an experience, you know, point of view. The second one is around the Musina Makado SEZ. So what is happening there is that we have been able to attract a multinational investor who is interested in developing a metallurgical cluster, and that development is indeed in line with the country's strategy for mineral beneficiation. So in the area where the zone is going to be, there's massive deposits of coking coal. And coking coal is used in two processes in steel, iron and steel making. The first one, you produce coke, not the one that we drink, but it is a component that is used in the hardening of steel in order to get a different grades. Then the second one is that you could use thermal coal. There's always a layer of thermal coal in coking coal. You could use the thermal coal to generate electricity through establishment of a power plant. And this is where the project has received a lot of negativity from the environmentalist. We understand that there is a global commitment to reduce the greenhouse gases so that we can be able to reduce the carbon footprint and therefore lessen the impact that is causing all of these climate changes that we are seeing. So the country has made a commitment to reduce a carbon footprint. So even though our emissions are more or less within the required standard, how the environmentalist sees this is that any level of increase in carbon, even if it is still within the stipulated standards, is a regression. Yeah. So those are the areas where we are busy trying to mitigate as best as possible. Like, for instance, we have gone out to reduce the size of the power plant that is supposed to be established there. We are saying the rest of the demand will be satisfied using the renewables. However, in processes of that nature, you do need a base load, because if suddenly you no longer have electricity, your molten iron can end up solidifying, and that infrastructure might have to be scrapped or reworked at a significant, you know, amount of money. So yes, we are trying to balance between nature and industry. So basically, that's where we are coming from. The last one is around my conduct as a professional. I have never had any instances where significant allegations are leveled against me, especially around issues of corruption and maladministration. The only thing that I can declare is that, of course, it has been back and forth between us and the environmentalist. And in some instances, you will see that I am being coded by the interested and affected parties as having said certain things, but that is how far I can remember in terms of the negativities, you know, around me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The last question is from Honorable Moss.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On the issue of stakeholders' relationships, managing key stakeholders' relationships is an important responsibility of the CIC. At times, stakeholders can be very demanding. Describe how you manage unreasonable stakeholders' expectation if you are successful become one of the council members.
That's a very good question. As I said, in this role, a private sector is definitely needed. And we all know that everybody is challenged around budgets. The first thing would be to identify those stakeholders that has a significant bearing on the success of the council. Right. And then once the stakeholders have been identified, the next question is to be able to respond as to what it is that the council is trying to achieve. And that has to be clear to each and every stakeholder. So that when you move on to the next level to discuss the expectations people have got a comprehension of the bigger picture that you are trying to achieve. So I will identify the stakeholders, and then I will contribute towards defining the objective of the council to a level of having a strategy, and then from there an indication of what do we expect from these stakeholders, a role by role. And then out of the expectations, there has to be now engagement with the stakeholders to try and find each other in respect of the securing of critical, you know, infrastructure.
Mr. Zita, is there anything you would like to ask this panel? You can ask the chair as well.
The question I have is the collaboration with other countries insofar as the securing of critical infrastructure is concerned. Is there an intention to collaborate with certain countries, and then if so, which are those?
Mr. Zita, the Act provides that officials that list the level of chief director or an equivalent to be designated by the heads of departments of the following institutions, which is Defense, Home Affairs, Public Works, and National Disaster Management Center, SAUGA, SAPS, and State Security Agency. And part of the risk management would have to be to include cyber security, physical security, national, continental, and international security. So you are five candidates from the private sector. You represent private sector and civil society. We will then do consultation with government, and you then represent the parliament's voice in the council. The Act, as you know, the Act then provides for minimum level of skills and qualifications. And you can imagine if out of the 10 shortlisted, only 5 will be appointed by the minister. Then we are looking for people who can multitask. And you're then looking for a transversal nature of skill set. And that multidisciplinary approach of an individual is what we require in the new normal, where we are doing things differently and we're sitting on boards and councils no longer become a futile exercise where you sit there and you earn money just for attending a meeting and for S&D. So the more meetings you attend, the more money you earn. You can understand that we are moving away from that culture in
the economic reconstruction and recovery plan of the president. We can no more longer be paying people for SNPs and votes for times spent sitting in meetings, where a meeting is held for a whole day because board members are paid per hour. And you have meetings being called once or twice a week. You add that up, then a full-time board member would earn more than a minister. And apart then, there is no such thing as a full-time board member coming to work every day. And then, because a board member's job is not a full-time job. If a board member attends meetings every day and you charge per hour, receiving a salary which is better than a consultant and which is better than your boss or the shareholder. So to cut a long story short, the multidisciplinary approach is that if you don't have a skill set which we think of our five candidates, we want to cover gender, we want to cover race, diversity, class, because we must bring in stakeholders, you must be able to represent stakeholders. So if one candidate brings us a legal service, can be looking at our IT systems and cyber security, but can also do well with stakeholders, then we're not interested in specialists. The minister must bring his own specialists. We want a multidisciplinary approach where we know our five candidates. We can call in the middle of the night and say, please, if you go into the council meeting, these are our concerns, so that when you report back to the portfolio committee, you know what of that. The portfolio committee will ask you on international relations, on SADC relations. Right now, our neighbor Mozambique is having serious threats and challenges. And there's an Eskom power line coming down from the Cahora-Bassa line. So you know that what happens in the neighboring countries, even with your Lesotho Islands, can impact on what happens to us. But we cannot go to a neighboring country and declare that a critical infrastructure. But if it is not, and there's a breakdown of even our transmission lines, I know what it's like if it impacts on our country. So, the time frame, we take this, we are on recess now. So all these members are supposed to be at home in their constituencies. Recess means we're doing constituency period, but they're sitting here for 3 days doing interviews very patiently, because we know there has been no council. It's now that the act is promulgated. It's a year later and we still want to get it done this year. By August, so you go through another round of vetting. If you make the short list of top five, by the minister. But our top 10 candidates we take to the National Assembly in August. So we're going to really push hard that this is also one of the milestones of the committee, and that it's concluded before the end of the day. You know, the end of this year. As a committee, you also set yourself certain performance indicators. You don't want a committee that came here year in, year out, and just came to talk. So this council, we want up and running before the end of the year. It's our target. Good luck. Anything else you'd like to ask?
I was saying thanks very much for giving a practical example on the question I asked earlier on around collaboration with other countries, because the Kahora Basa electricity is one part, and then we are receiving water from Lesotho, you know, as well, the Lesotho Highland project. So if there is no a collaboration in respect of this particular matter, a critical infrastructure, with other countries, we might be found wanting as a country. The same goes with our border securities. If one side is implementing a system to try and mitigate the perceived or identified risk, and the other is not following suit, the residual risk will still remain, and that might prove to be problematic later on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zita. And once more, my apologies, but congratulations to you. In fact, you mentioned it in your assessment that you performed very well under pressure and that you managed a very stressful situation very well. So well done and congratulations on that. And my humblest apologies that we had to put you through something as unprofessional as a sound system not working. We are the servants of Parliament and we would like to see the highest level of respect given to this, which is also a key point in our country. Parliament is a critical infrastructure. So it's where we have to start as parliamentarians to ensure that the police who even work on this precinct, that they understand that this is a critical infrastructure. Thank you very much. It was an honor listening to you, and thank you for agreeing to be a candidate and to come to the interview. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much to members of the panel.
Mr. Lobby, they'll take you out now, eh? All right. Mr. Lobby will also arrange that you get to the airport on time. Please don't forget your phone and your bag and all your things before you leave, eh? Thank you. Well, we resumed at, I don't even think we must. Time was in and out and stop and start, so I don't even think we need to look at time here, because we really disorganized this candidate. Thank you very much. Eh? We can ask the lady to come online now. Sorry? Yeah. Thank you.